How do I know if this is even working?
Ladies of the LLLLV.
Thank you. I'll be here all year. Or as long as you listen. Or really just whichever comes first or is better. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now. Bye.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to episode 5. Wait, this is my 5th episode.
5 is my favorite number.
I feel like I always think of you when I think of the number 5.
Because I have like a little curve to me, but I also have like edges.
I didn't know that was why.
Edges and curves.
And I just mean every time I rate the number 5, but
I love 5 because I think that 4 and 6 are mean. That's why I love 5.
Okay. Have we had this conversation before?
Probably.
All right. Well, anyways, it makes sense that you're my 5th episode. That's what I was thinking in my mind as I said that. Ladies of the LV, I feel like where I'm sitting right now and who is in front of me, I have not felt this nervous in a very long time. Really? In a good way. It's like a good nervous. Because I really want to make you proud.
Like, you always make me proud. Do you have butterflies? Is that what it is?
It's like borderline between butterflies and, like, the strong desire to chug a glass of wine.
Well, you could. Just not in my office.
Okay. All right. So, our guest today is Jill Dunn Jones. Jill Dunn. But now she's married, so it's Jill Dunn Jones.
Yes.
Jill Gray Dunn Jones. I'm just going to keep saying your name.
Four names, only 4 syllables.
And that's it.
That's it. Simple.
What else can we say?
Simple and easy.
Okay, so we are in Jill Dunn Jones's beautiful office in the Banana Factory because she is the motherfucking artistic director at PYT.
I am.
Do you care that that's how I introduced it?
It's on my card. Motherfucking artistic director of PYT.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure.
That's what I give to all the parents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so just they know.
I hope it goes
well. Who's in charge?
Good.
It's me.
You're a boss-ass bitch.
Boss-ass bitch.
She's the artistic director, which if you're not in the world of theater, you should know that she's the CEO. Of Pennsylvania Youth Theater.
It's a little more collaborative than CEO because you have the balance of the managing director. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to deal directly with all like the money and the business side of it. I get to deal with the fun part of it.
Well,
the artistic part of it.
And also the purpose of it.
Right.
So the heart. You're the heart.
The heart.
So
I'm not the brains, but I'm the heart.
I would argue that the heart is more important. No offense to the brains portion.
I really love the brains
portion. But in the arts, it comes from the heart.
It does.
So it's crazy because Jill Dunn Jones and I met at PYT when I was a student. Mm-hmm. So I was 17, so 10 years ago. Have we talked about this? It was our
10-year anniversary in, October? September? October?
I guess, but you know, I recently saw that we like didn't become Facebook friends until like the winter time.
Well, it just took me a little bit longer to get on the Facebook.
Yeah, maybe you weren't even on it, and that's why.
Because I'm old.
You're not older.
I'm older than you.
How old are you?
I'm 43.
I forgot that for a second.
43 and change, actually.
43 and feeling...
Feeling fine. Feeling fancy and frisky.
Flirty and thriving.
43.
Are you feeling flirty and thriving?
Yeah.
Are you?
I mean, not every day, but right now, flirty and thriving, yes.
Okay, don't look at my notes.
I won't.
I want to set them there.
I'll look over here.
Okay, so we met. This is the part that I think I'm most nervous about because it's such like, it's the kind of story that you really want to give it justice because I feel like it was such a pivotal time for both of us.
Yeah, see? There you go.
Let's just sing a song and everyone will understand.
No one will want to hear me sing.
I think they do.
They really don't.
Hear the people's call.
They've told me.
Okay, so when I met Jill Dunn Jones, like I said, I was 17. I was a junior in high school.
You're actually 16.
What?
You were turning 17.
Okay.
So you're turning 17 in 08.
You're right. Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
This is 07.
What a memory.
Yeah.
So obviously, when you're 16, 17, you're already experiencing the oddities of that time in your life. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that that was probably one of the most confusing times of my life.
For both of us, actually.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Well, because I just moved back.
Jill Dunn Jones had just moved back.
I was super confused.
Yeah.
I was 33. Mm-hmm. And I was had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, I think the difference is like when you're, I mean, maybe not always, but I feel like now when I go through confusing times, I can at least articulate why it feels confusing. But at that time, I didn't have the tools or the resources.
Or the wisdom
to figure out why am I so confused? What is it that I want? And I feel like the universe, HP, higher power, as Jill Dunn likes to say, was like, here's this person who you need. And I feel like you needed me just as much.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about when Jill says she moved back. It's because she moved home from, she was actually in rehab.
I was.
And she is now 11 years and some change sober since then.
Yes, ma'am.
And can you talk a little bit about sobriety and what brought you here? It's a loaded question.
I can. I was living in New York. I had been there almost 8 years, and I am a recovering alcoholic, so I was in my addiction. I was drinking a lot, often, and it had gotten really, really, really bad. And I was working at a theater in the city, and they had given me several chances to get my act together, but I just couldn't. And there was one weekend I was supposed to do something for the company, and I failed again, and I got back on Monday and they fired me. And so at that point, I was living in a tiny apartment all by myself with my cat, Shuggy. Oh. Remember Shuggy?
Where was this apartment in New York?
This was in Brooklyn.
Okay.
So I worked on 42nd Street, but I lived in Brooklyn. So it was a 150 square foot apartment. Right? With all my shit inside of it.
Is that like the size of this room?
It's actually the same size of this room. And okay. I had a little kitchenette.
That's really cute.
And a bed. It wasn't cute though. It was disgusting.
Because you
I had like roaches and it was disgusting.
God.
And I had like wine bottles everywhere. My clothes were strewn all over the place. I didn't do laundry. I didn't take out the trash.
Okay,
it was bad.
I have two lead up questions that I don't know if I've ever actually asked you.
Okay.
One, was this the first and only time in your life you were ever fired?
Yes.
And it was a shitty feeling.
It was the worst feeling. Well, because I'm like you. I'm a super overachiever, and I'm also a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. So I'd done everything right, you know. I was a good student. I did really well in college. I got this great job. I got my master's. So I did all this stuff. And then, but on top of all of that, I was also an alcoholic. So I was overachieving in both my drinking and in my work and professional life. So when I got fired, I mean, I was also really, I was still drunk from the night before. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was really overdramatic, like really overdramatic. I was overdramatic. Nobody else was. Like the whole company was like, okay, pack up your shit and go.
Yeah. Can you really still stay drunk for a whole, like, extra day?
I don't remember sleeping, and I think I was drinking in the mornings. Like, I was still drinking in the mornings. So okay. I was still drunk, and then I was continued to drink to chill the nerves. And then they fired me, and I was disgusting. It was a mess. I was a hot mess. And then, you know, for a week, I just was in solitude in my apartment.
And didn't tell anyone?
I told my family, but I blamed everybody else. Like, I was pointing fingers. They don't understand me. They're too hard on me. Life in New York is too hard. It was not my fault at all in my brain. And then two of my closest friends, one of them hadn't heard from me. She thought I was dead. Natalie Moore. Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Nats.
So she called my other friend, best friend Alex Olson, and they came over to my apartment, and it was a disaster. So I decided, though, I had some forethought, I guess. I had my parents. I thought this was all, like, because of you know, how I grew up. So I invited my parents to come to therapy in New York with me. Mm-hmm. And they were on their way, actually. And Natalie called my mom and dad to say, you need to be prepared for what you're about to see. And so my parents came, they got me into the car, they took all my stuff and my cat, and we went home. And I think 2 days later, it was, I got home the 20th, I got home the 19th. The 21st, I was at Karen Foundation in Wernersville, Pennsylvania. And then I was in treatment until I moved to an extended care facility in Arizona called Pia's Place, which no longer exists. I know, it shut down. Yeah, I'm really sad about it. So I was there for 4 months, and then I moved back to the area. Listen. With nothing, no job, nothing.
And that's when I met you.
Well, no, I worked for my mom in her warehouse for her store, unpacking boxes, and I was I have a master's degree, and I was watering plants for my dad's company in the front of their building, and that's because I didn't have anything. And then I sent a letter to Madeline Ramsey, mm-hmm. And I asked if I could volunteer for her. And she invited me to see Seussical.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know, a month or two later, she offered me a job. And then I started working at PYT.
Okay. I have so many questions and comments. Because every time I hear you tell this story, I can't even... If you don't know Jill Dunn Jones, when you look at her, she's like a representation of goodness. Aww. Honestly, you're like... spicy and fun and super smart and so motivated and like everything everyone ever wants to be. So the fact that every time you tell me this story, I'm like, I can't even picture it. I just can't.
What, me being a crazy drunk?
Well, just Natalie saying like, you need to be prepared for what you're about to see. Like what, I can't even imagine.
I mean, I don't think I could imagine either. I don't think there's ever a moment in anyone's life where they expect to be, like, my soul. I'm not over-exaggerating this in any way. My soul was destroyed. I just destroyed it. I destroyed myself. Like, I did it to myself. And alcoholism is a disease, and it's progressive. So the longer you drink, the more downward spiral, the faster it happens. And luckily, mine was really fast. I mean, I got sober at 32, where... You know, luckily more people are coming in younger, but 32 is pretty young to get sober.
Yeah.
So, but I will say, for me and my life, and this is where you come in, that I've had fortune. I feel like I've been taken care of. Like, I've had someone or something watching over me that I've never really had to. When I came here, I didn't apply for a job here. I was just asking Mrs. Ramsey if I could, like, just volunteer for shows, if I could usher, if I could help paint sets. And she gave me a job. And then, 3 years later, you know, she leaves, other people come in, they leave, and now I'm Mrs. Ramsey. Like, what? This is making, this is crazy.
Yeah. That's also not just luck. It's because of who you are.
Well, but also I think that there's something, like, I'm being taken care of. Somebody's got my back.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you coming into my life, too, where I had my family here. I didn't know anybody when I got back. None of my friends lived in Bethlehem. They all lived in New York or across the country, or I had nobody when I got here. So... where I was like a 17-year-old when you first met me. Mm-hmm. That's where I was, I think, maturity-wise. Not necessarily maturity-wise, but in terms of, like, where I was starting from.
Yeah.
Being a kid again.
Yeah.
I had to start all over.
100%.
And so that's where we connected.
It was, I feel like nobody understood it.
Mm-mm.
People were like, how are you, you were twice my age when I met you.
Mm-hmm. I still am.
Wait, no. Oh, it'll continue to be that way.
I will always be twice your age.
Listen, I'm holding a math class tomorrow if anyone would like to attend. Okay, so you're twice my age.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep saying it. We don't care about age, though. That's the thing.
We don't. And it never really mattered.
It doesn't.
It didn't matter.
I don't think there's ever been a time where I feel like you say things to me like, oh, you'll understand someday. Or, like, you always treat me that where I'm at in my life is where I'm at.
Well, I think, for me, I always wanted somebody to just kind of be with me through the process of growing up. Like someone older than me, like a big sister. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have that. I didn't have anyone like that. And that's part of why I wanted to be a teacher too, because I think, I mean, you've heard me say this, I think all kids, they want to be seen, heard, and understood. That's it. Like the worst thing we can do as adults is not allow them to be who they are at that present moment.
Yeah.
And so if I want people to treat me that way, then it's my responsibility to do the same thing, whether they're 3, 13, 30, it doesn't matter. Like, it's my responsibility to treat people the way that I would want to have been treated at that age too.
Well, you do. And I know that there are so many other students that look up to you and just love the shit out of you and like can't even put into words. I mean, I don't think I could have given you more like gifts throughout like the first year of our friendship, because I felt like I couldn't like do enough to show you like how happy I was that you were in my life.
Aww.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I still feel that way.
I know.
But it was like so meant to be that I just feel like where I was at and where you were at, it was like, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was perfect.
It was. Still is.
It still is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have one more question just to circle back.
Yeah.
How long would you say you were, like when you were leading up to what was your bottom, how many months or days or whatever leading up to it would you have considered to be like super unhealthy?
Yeah. I would say probably years, yeah. Not months. I would say I knew I wasn't. The switch happened, I think, when my friends got married and started having babies.
Mm-hmm.
That people started doing adult things. You know, people wouldn't go out every night of the week, and they wouldn't want to be out until 4 o'clock in the morning, and that's when a shift in me was like, something's wrong with me. Like, I feel like something's wrong with me. But I always drank alcoholically. I mean, ever since the first time I ever drank, I drank alcoholically. But it didn't get really, really bad until the last 2.5 years were really, really bad.
When you lived by yourself?
When I lived, I wasn't by myself for the whole last 2.5 years. I had a boyfriend at the time, break up, get back together, break up. Live together, don't live together. But the last year was horrible. It was awful. That's when I really started drinking around the clock. I wasn't drinking at work, but I was drinking before work. And it's all I thought about all day long, obsessed all day long. And I would go online and look up, I mean, I wasn't doing my job. I would go to work. I was thinking about drinking and would look up like cirrhosis of the liver. And I mean, constantly, that was the only thing my brain was able to function thinking about. And so all I would think about was, am I killing myself? And then I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to go to the gym in the morning. And right when I'd get off the subway, I'd go to the liquor store, buy my booze, go home, and drink my face off. And then wake up the next morning and like this horrible cycle kept happening over and over again. And then people just didn't want to hang out with me anymore. So I was going out to bars by myself till 4 a.m, walking home by myself. Stupid stuff. Really stupid stuff.
It just blows my mind because of who you are now.
But I think, honestly, you know enough people that are in recovery, like my husband. You know, you wouldn't think of us that way.
Yeah.
And thank God, I don't want anybody to have to remember me that way.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Well, the world brought you here.
The world brought me here.
So you came to PYT, you started as the outreach director, which is essentially getting into schools, running workshops, pre-show things.
We didn't do pre-show stuff until later, but we did after-school residencies. So I was in probably, I'm gonna say like 6 or 7 schools.
A week? Or like overall?
At some points I was like a week, but it just depended on what time of year it was. Because we did 8-week sessions. So when I wasn't doing that though, Mrs. Ramsey had me doing whatever else she needed to have done.
Yeah.
Typing up her notes because she didn't use a computer.
Like, for those of you who don't know, Mrs. Ramsey, Madeline Ramsey, but we call her Mrs. Ramsey, is the founding artistic director of PYT, and she's amazing.
She's one of the most incredible women I've ever met.
Yeah.
She should be on your podcast.
Yeah, but she moved to Seattle.
She's not in the LV anymore.
Nope. She's in Seattle. Well, she's really not in Seattle. Everyone says that, but she's on Mercer Island.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But did she appoint you as education director?
No. So she was here until, what, 2009 she left?
Yep.
So I was with her for like a year and a half. And then we brought in this other artistic director. He then appointed me as the drama director.
Okay.
So drama slash education director. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started taking over the teaching here. So I was the drama teacher for every single class.
Which is nuts.
Which is nuts. Which was crazy.
How many classes happen here?
I think I was teaching 15 classes a week.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. It was crazy. But Mrs. Ramsey did it.
Yeah.
She didn't teach the older classes.
Yeah.
She never taught the high school classes.
Yeah. I always choose stories that I know she read. Cause
so do I.
If I don't know it, it like doesn't seem right.
I know. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I'm the same. Although I did buy a bunch of new books. I'll show you. Because they're really good. There's some really cute ones.
So PYT present day, you are the artistic director. Obviously, it's evolved and grown so much, and you've put the Jill Dunn stamp on it, which I love. What do you feel like, first of all, for those of you who don't know PYT, it's Pennsylvania Youth Theater, and you should look it up because...
123pyt.org.
I can't even express to you how many times I've typed that into a URL box. What do you think people should know about PYT if they don't know it already? Why is it important in the Lehigh Valley?
Well, here's the thing. You were a PYT student. I was a PYT student back in the 80s and 90s. I think we're an organization that's really underestimated in the area, that for as long as we've been here, which is 32 years, there's a large population of people in the area that don't know who we are for whatever reason. There's something about this place, and it's why I came back. It's why a lot of our students come back to teach for us in the summers. Former students come back to teach for regular seasons. People stop in to visit all the time. There's something so comforting, and there's a sense of family here. Mm-hmm. And going back to what I was saying before, that we see kids, we listen to them, we understand them, we take in who they are as human beings. And the thing about theater in general is that's, to me, it's the purpose of what we do, right? We're here to tell stories, and what better stories to tell than the people that we have right in front of us, and give them access to creating story and building story and finding their own voice in all of it. And, you know, you're stereotypical. We do 3 shows a season, and kids audition for them, and they get to sing and dance and act and do all that fun stuff. And obviously they learn skills and techniques. But I think there's a heart to PYT that I have never found anywhere else. I don't think there's anything like it in this area. There really isn't. I'm not just saying that because I'm the artistic director, because... I mean, part of it, yeah. because that's how I want it to be. But there's a lot of love here.
There's so much love. And I can see it even in my students who are PAT students also, that I can tell that they feel it. It's like a second school almost. But I think too, for kids, it's so easy to get caught up in just your school and the activities there. And I know people are so busy and they have, you know, club soccer and club volleyball and karate. I mean, there's so many things, but I think that this is kind of like a second school that you go to because you're with the same kids your whole life and you have a common passion that brings all different experiences and not just the same things over and over. And I just think it offers you a sense of balance that most kids don't ever get. And I can see it in my kids. Like their faces light up when they tell me that they have PYT. And I say, well, you tell Miss Jill that you can't miss rehearsal because I'm more important. And they think it's really scary when I talk about it.
They do. And then they tell me, Miss Veronica said, Miss Potion said that I can't miss rehearsal because she's more important. Yep. I'm like, well,
it's fun.
Tell her, fuck off. I don't say that. I would never say that to them. That'd be horrible.
Sometimes I like make weird gestures too. Not inappropriate ones.
Oh, no, I know what you're saying.
I do like the come at me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Who did I say that to? It was Luke. Someone little. Was it Luke?
Luke Ambar.
Oh, that's who it was. He's not here anymore. They moved. I'm so sad.
Yeah, I know. I love that kid. I love that family. Gosh. They're a good family.
Jill and I have a lot of the have similar students because I teach theater as well, but I'm not an artistic director of
You're the only theater teacher at the school, so you really are the artistic director of the school.
That's true. I think it's a little different, but I love that we have common students because then I get to mess with their little brains. Because they're scared of you sometimes.
They are scared of me sometimes.
And they should be.
They should. Very scary.
You're
terrifying.
Not. I've only seen you get angry one time, and it was when I was chasing Miranda and Jesse Panic with paint in the hallway.
Yeah. That happens every summer. There's always one moment every summer that some of the high school / college kids get
rowdy.
Just cross the line a little bit.
Rowdy.
And I turn into scary, scary, scary Jill.
I don't want to see it.
It's really scary.
I don't want to see it ever.
Panic
again.
In their faces.
Yeah.
Little pee dribbling down their legs, I'm sure.
Yes.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Yeah.
All right. So much has happened since we first met.
Mm-hmm.
For example.
Yes.
I don't like to talk that much about the peep on Ladies of the LV, but I do think you should talk a little bit about Tim Jones.
Okay, my hubbin.
Jill Dunn Jones got married at Steel Stacks. Well, no, your wedding was at a
Moravian
church. The cutest church I've ever seen.
It was super cute, Edgeboro Moravian.
It was the night before New Year's Eve. It was December 30th.
Mm-hmm.
What year?
2012.
Oh my gosh.
It was before I was artistic director.
Was it really?
It's when everything was, like, changing here at PYT. I got back from my honeymoon, and then the board asked me to take over.
And you moved in with Tim?
I'd moved in with Tim prior to us getting married. Sorry. Sorry, world.
Whoopsies.
I wasn't following any rules there.
Their house is the cutest thing I've ever seen.
It's cute. It's adorable.
Yeah.
Well, the cutest part of the story is the fact that I've known Tim since I was 13 years old.
I actually think the cutest part of the story is that your first date was at the Waffle House.
It was. We went to the Waffle House.
Talk to me about that romantic night.
It was a morning. It wasn't a night. I had invited Tim to a wedding of an old friend of mine in Rochester, New York. And I was so sick of going to weddings by myself, and I really wanted to go with somebody who I knew but who was also sober, and I knew Tim was, but
how did you know he was?
One of my good friends too, but his best friend and I, when I moved back, kind of reconnected and we're talking, and he started coming back into Alcoholics Anonymous, which is I'm a member of. I guess I'm not allowed to say.
You're not supposed to tell people.
Well, I can say it about myself.
Oh.
I'm allowed to talk about it myself.
I thought I guess that makes sense. Because I know a lot of people
can share my anonymity, can't I?
I'm going to now list every person I know.
No, you can't. I'm kidding. I can't. And I'm not saying names here.
It's okay.
But anyway, this friend of ours, we were you know, going to meetings together, and I was saying how I wanted to go to this wedding. And he's like, you should ask Tim. And I was like,
Everyone knew. I'm pretty sure the entire Lehigh Valley knew this was going to happen.
I don't know.
Your friends, I should say.
Possibly,
my friends. And family were like.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But he went to this. So that first date was really us getting our plan together for Rochester. We weren't really dating then.
I remember this now.
And who was going to pick up who. And he was bringing sleeping bags. And so we went. And then we didn't have our official first date until July 6th, where we went to the Palace Diner, because that's what you do when you're in recovery. You go to diners.
Wow.
And we went to Put You that night to play miniature golf.
To play a little
mini golf.
Wow. Why? I feel like this is the first time I'm hearing this story.
No, you heard this story.
I definitely heard it.
Yeah. Well, so we did. But Tim did PYT as well as a kid.
Yeah.
And our parents live around the corner from one another. We rode the bus together. We carpooled to PYT together. He used to sneak over to my basement with his friends when we were in high school.
It was serendipitous.
It was serendipitous. We never dated, though, just to be clear.
Yeah.
We never dated. He wasn't my type back in the day.
When did you feel the change? Was it at the Waffle House or was it in Rochester?
It was our drive to Rochester. It wasn't Waffle House. I just didn't know him well enough. But it was our drive to Rochester. It was the first time I think I'd felt so comfortable with somebody, like talking to somebody and sharing my story. And I felt completely at ease in my own skin. Like I didn't have to put on any airs or pretend I like things that I didn't like. And all that stupid shit you have to go through when you first start dating someone. Mm-hmm. I just didn't feel like I had to do that with him.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's really nice. And so then, yeah, we dated, I moved in, we got married. Now we're together. We have
and
a dog.
And they have a dog.
We have a puppy. We have a Gussie.
His name is Gus.
Gus, my baby.
Listen, you know, I'm obviously a huge Tim Jones fan.
Yes, you
He's
are.
He's the only man friend of yours I've ever actually liked. I also think I have a great, I'm a great barometer
you
of my
are.
Friends.
People?
People. I've always, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I don't often toot my own horn, but I'm about to toot it.
Toot toot.
I've never been wrong about when I think my friends, people are D-bags versus when they actually end up with them. I only have, two friends who are married, but I'm two for two.
But here, you know what? And it's not necessarily always about the marriage. Maybe it's about the move-in.
Yeah.
Maybe it's about, that's not a good idea.
Or just the second date.
Second date.
What I do want to say about your wedding, just to bring Natalie full circle in this conversation, is that I remember when you were dancing your first dance, and Natalie was standing there just crying, watching you and Tim. And she turned back at me and she was like, she just finally gets it. And I was like, that's such a beautiful thing to say, but now hearing you retell your story to me, I also, but just a side note, think you should retell your story to me every 5 years because I feel so refreshed.
Good. Okay. Little. Anyways. Okay. I'll write it just in my memoirs.
Hearing how she was such a key player in your recovery, and then for her to have that moment where she was standing there watching you in sobriety and love.
She was with me till the bitter end. She was one of those friends that saw my spiral down because she had gotten married, gotten pregnant, and she watched me just fall apart. She was one of very few people that actually her her spidey sense, you know, was that something isn't there's something wrong here. Nothing's as it seems with Jill right now. And I was lying, which I never used to do with my friendships to that degree. I mean, you know, I might lie about who I slept with or whatever, but But to the point where, like, nothing I said was believable. We actually had a girls' weekend a couple months ago, and she was talking about that, how she, that's when she realized something was really wrong, when she couldn't believe what I was saying to her. Because I had never really been, we'd lived together in college, like, I, you know, she knows me really well, and she sang at my wedding, and you sang, you wrote a song for us.
I did.
And one of our pictures in our house is of Tim looking at you and me looking at Tim.
Aww.
It's really sweet. It's one of my favorite pictures. Yeah.
Is this your way of asking me to move in? Because I will.
Oh, do you want to sleep upstairs with Tim or downstairs with me?
Either way would be great.
Okay. Or we can put you in the kitchen with Gussie.
I would love to sleep in the kitchen. It's where I belong anyways.
No, you don't belong in the kitchen.
I just mean because I like midnight snacks.
Oh, that's true. I know. Our house is small enough that you wouldn't have to go very far.
Listen, I spent a drunken evening in your house.
You did. You were throwing up, though, in my bathroom.
It was a fun time.
It was a good time for all.
For everyone. Okay, so I have, like, a little, I want to say trivia, but it's not really trivia. It's, like, a segment, I would call it, if I was, like, a professional podcaster.
Okay.
Because I was trying to think of, like, some fun facts and some fun themes, but I think, like, the main theme of my friendship with you is that you've taught me so much. But there are certain things that are that can be summed up into, like, little phrases that you always tell me.
Okay.
So I want to talk about, like, two of them.
Okay.
And I want you to elaborate on them because I think you are more wise than the average person. And you have been since you were 32 when
since
I first met
back
you.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. Okay, so where did I write them? Oh, my gosh. Oh, there it is. Okay. So one of the things you always used to tell me, which I don't think I understood it that much until probably within like the last year, I finally am like, wow, she was fucking right, is you would always say hindsight is 20/20.
Yes.
That's not a common thing people say.
Well, I think people say it a lot. I don't think people understand what they mean when they say it. So I've made a lot of mistakes, like, prior to getting sober, but also during my sobriety, I made a lot of mistakes, a lot of mistakes. And I think, you know, in retrospect and looking back, I can see really clearly where that mistake started and how I continued to make mistakes to so that situation would continue a lot longer than it needed to if I would have just learned. I have, ever since I was a kid, I need to do things to realize if they're good or bad, right? Mm-hmm. So no one can tell me anything.
Yeah.
You can tell me your story and be like, okay, great, but I'll need to experience it myself to learn my lesson, which is not smart.
I think it's optimistic, though.
Well, I think it's damaging, though, too. But you... Everyone has to create their own path. Mm-hmm. So in so many, especially when I first got sober, I would look back at like the last 2 years of my drinking and clearly see like where I was manipulating people and where I was lying to myself and where I was justifying and rationalizing my own behavior. And it was so clear to me that as I grew in sobriety, I didn't necessarily need to continue to make, you know, the idea that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. To me, that also is hindsight is 20/20. You look back, you see your circumstance. For some people, it's rose-colored glasses. Oh, it wasn't that bad when I did it. Look, or, now I see where the moments were that I screwed up or where I fucked up something or I just wasn't listening or I didn't take my own advice or someone else's advice. And so I stopped doing the insane things. I stopped the cycle of insanity because I started to learn from my past.
It's not easy.
It's not easy at all. It's really, really hard. Because then you have to admit that you're wrong.
Yeah.
And who wants to do that?
You always talk about humility too. You always talk about that.
Well, I think humility, when I first got sober, I was like, what? Because it's all over the program. Everything's about, you know, finding your humility. And humility and humiliation are two different things. Being humble is about it's so complicated to
you don't have to
even try and figure out what it is in
to
words.
Articulate what humility is.
Yeah.
I always thought it was basically like being able to admit when you've made a mistake.
Well, that too, but also to a lot of people in addiction, you know, ego is really invested. It's about our ego. And it's putting your ego aside.
Okay.
Like setting your ego aside. And part of that is, you know what? I fucked up and I'm sorry. Like cleaning up your side of the street in a situation. But also that not everything is about you.
Yeah.
You don't control everything or anyone. And the world doesn't revolve around you.
Yeah.
And nobody gives a shit what you're doing right now. And not in a bad way. I mean, like, everyone's looking at me. Everyone's seeing me. Like, I'm not that important in the grand scheme of the world. I'm not that important. But it's my job to me as a teacher, as a human being, to make other people feel important. Does that make sense?
It does.
You know?
This is why I want to come back in my next life as you.
Well, I mean, if I live long enough and you die before me, you just...
I don't know.
Suction back into my body.
I feel like even now when I hear you give me advice, I'm like, damn, I want to record that and, like, play it in my sleep.
Well, now you are recording it.
I am! I didn't even... But I just feel like I can remember, like, a 17-year-old. I was, like, the little birdie with, like, my beak open, just, like, wanting you to tell me all of this. And it was... You were like my Oprah. You still are.
Oh, and you get a car. And you get a car.
Feel free to gift me.
And you get a car.
Okay. I had one other thing that you would always say to me. And I do feel like this is one that I've heard other people say, but you live by it, I feel, which is what makes you so healthy. You would always say to me, what other people think of you is none of your business.
Yes.
And I feel like you still say that to me.
Well, I say it to everybody. I have to say it to myself, too, because I get caught up in that kind of stuff, too. Especially, I mean, you know, working at a school, working here, people think a lot about us. Mm-hmm. Parents, kids, the outside world and who comes in to see what we're doing. But I can't spend my time worrying about what other people are thinking about me because then I'm wasting all my energy on... them, and I can't control what they're thinking about me either. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, people are going to think whatever they want about me and my decisions. And I mean, you know, and when I cast a show, who am I pissing off? Who's hurting? Yeah. I mean, you probably go through the same thing. It kills me to do casting.
Yeah.
It makes my heart hurt because I feel for each one of these kids. I really do. Like when I'm going through this process, like my heart is in pain because I don't want anyone to be sad or upset or hurt think that they're not good enough.
Yeah.
But still with the little guys and, you know, and little guys, I'm meeting my high school students too. I can't bear that burden all the time. Mm-hmm. And parents are going to be pissed and kids are going to be sad and it sucks.
Yeah.
And I cry myself to sleep at night thinking about these poor little kids wanting something so badly and me not being able to fulfill that dream. So I'm also not that important. And this isn't the most important thing in their whole lives, too. So I have to, like, to me, it's like keeping things into perspective.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I'm not good at it.
Casting is, you are good at it, but I would say casting is probably the hardest part. Anytime you're going to put art out into the world in any shape, you're never going to please everyone. Do you have a folder that's just titled Shakespeare?
Yes.
Wow. Can I look in the folder later?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Jolden Jones, I have two closing questions for you, but before we get there, I also wanted to reminisce on the fact that you were the very first person who encouraged me to learn how to play the guitar.
Yeah.
You actually bought me my first lesson.
Yes, I did at the Guitar Center, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember that.
You got me started, and now I'm a big shot guitar player. You're a big shot.
You're a rock star.
Opening up for the 7:30 advisory meeting at the Swain School.
Hey, opening up for a wedding reception.
I am. That's on the ukulele. Okay, so I actually forgot to mention I'm flying solo today. I'm sure everyone has figured that out, but I have a co-host normally.
Who's your co-host? Her name's
Amy Unger. She's amazing. And
does she have a husband, John Unger?
She's not married.
Okay, then forget it.
Forget you, John. She couldn't come today, which I was really sad about because you would love her. And we have, like, a great banter situation. She likes to pretend she doesn't like me, but I know she does.
That's cute.
It's one of those.
I like that.
But I also kind of feel like it was okay that I was solo for this one because it's you and I.
Yeah.
What could anyone else contribute to this anyways?
I would feel bad for her.
I would. I would just tell her to go down the street and grab a drink.
Or she'd just be sitting.
She'd like it.
I give her, there's plenty of stuff to do in this room.
Color or something.
She could. She could read a children's book.
She's a redhead. I just wanted that to be said as well.
She's a little ginger. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Okay, so normally we finish with the same two questions for all of our women.
Okay.
And the one that she asks is, what do you love most about yourself?
What do I love most about myself? There's so many things I love. This is something that I've grown to love about myself. I mean, I'm not going to lie. There are a lot of things I do love about myself. Like, I'm in a place in my life where I'm happy that I can say that. Because I think it's important as women that we love ourselves and love a lot about ourselves. I've always loved my sense of humor. I always thought that that was a good characteristic. But recently, it's my, it's this sense of peace that I've had has started happening in the past like 2 years, where I don't live in anxiety anymore, right? And I don't get overwhelmed by situation. I get stressed out, but I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think, like, I just have a sense that everything's going to be okay. Like, no matter what, and this is what my dad would say, the world's not going to end and no one's going to die. Like, you're not that powerful, right? And so I think I'm living that now, that I have to do the next right thing. If I do what I'm supposed to do, if I wake up in the morning and I make sure that I am a good person and I'm kind to people, like, things will be okay. Peace. There's a peace.
Where can I buy some of that?
It's good called thought? Being an elder.
Okay. Well,
it's being 43.
Save the date, people. 2050. Shout out to Mike Dunn, by the way.
Shout out to Mike Dunn.
I also love all of Jill Dunn Jones's family members so much.
I love my family too.
Ryan. Shout out to you. You would never be listening to this.
Unless I let make him listen to
it. But if
it.
You do, you should know that I love you.
Aww. Brother, okay. My brother.
Brother, my brother. I have a final question. Okay. It's a fill in the blank, but this question is actually reminding me of something I want to tell you really quick.
Okay.
You might already know this, but you know how the other day was International Women's Day?
Yes, I do.
So hashtag happy International Women's Day to ladies woo-hoo! Of the TV.
Woo woo.
I was reading about all of these, like, famous women of history who actually either I never paid attention in history class or this is what's wrong with our world. I just never heard of them. Have you ever heard of Sybil Ludington?
No, I have not.
I had a drunk history episode on my Instagram story the other night.
I freaking love drunk history. That's where I'm getting my history these days. Yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I had my own little mini version because I was like halfway through a bottle of Chardonnay and I was reading about this. And then I went and told all my Instagram followers how upset I was because Sybil Ludington was a Revolutionary War heroine. And she would ride to alert that the British were coming. Who do you know alerted about the British
Isn't
were coming?
Isn't that Apple? Paul Revere. Paul Revere.
Yeah, Apple. Yeah. Johnny Appleseed.
Paul Revere.
Okay, Sybil rode twice the distance as Paul Revere. And she was younger than him.
Well, I'm not surprised. Anyways. We get erased from history all the time. Well, we get erased from history. That's why we have history.
Time's up.
Time's up.
I'm just saying.
Time's Hashtag time's up.
Oprah. Okay. Anyways, this is the final question. You have to fill in the blank.
Okay.
If women ran the world.
Blank. If women ran the world. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful world it would be. Yeah. Seriously.
That's it.
I think we'd be in such a different. It could have happened. Yeah. Could have happened.
I know.
Damn you, Russia.
I know. This is officially turned into a political podcast.
Yep.
You're welcome.
It's turned the corner.
I'm all for it. It's turned the corner. Thank you for being on my podcast.
Thanks for having me on your podcast.
I'm sorry I came hungover.
It's okay.
With chicken soup.
It's okay.
This is the second podcast I've done really hungover.
I wouldn't have known it unless you told me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good. That's an internal thing. Well,
see, what other people think of me is none of my business.
Not your damn business.
Not your damn business. Or projecting what people should think.
Listen, for those of you listening, if you still are, you should look up PYT's upcoming show, Beauty and the Beast,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to be incredible, and you could come support the local arts and a children's theater and feel good while doing it.
It's May 11th through May 20th at the Ice House on Sand Island in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. 123pyt.org.
Find it. Look it up. You can look up Jill Dunn Jones on all the social media and stalk
really.
her.
Not really.
Don't do it, but do it.
I don't do anything on social media. I'm super boring.
You could still look her up.
You see pictures of my dog.
There you go. That's all you need.
That's enough.
Do you have anything else you want to share to the people?
That I love you and I think you're incredible.
Me or the
people?
Yeah,
no, you. And the people, but I don't know the people. I know you.
Well, thanks for being
on. I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you.
Yay.
Love you.
Love you too.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
On behalf of everyone at Ladies of the LV, and by everyone I mean just me and Amy, don't be salty, Amy, I said your name. I would really like to thank you for listening, and if you like what you hear, please head over to iTunes and subscribe for future episodes, because we're going to have a lot of badass females on here. And by a lot, I mean hundreds, maybe even millions. Can anyone tell me the exact population of the Lehigh Valley? I don't know why I have to be so aggressive with numbers. Oh my goodness. Anyway, also, please feel free to visit veronicawithaglassofbubbly.com, where we have the podcasts and more blogs and fun things for you to read while you're sipping on a glass of champagne or the bottle. No judgment. We all do what we need to do.